Alrighty, are we live? We are live. Today, we are going to talk about Castlevania in episode 9 of the Dirk Boyd podcast. We're getting right into it because this is my favorite game, one of my favorite games in the entire video game franchise, in the entire video game history, basically. So again, welcome to the Dirk Boyd podcast. My name is Rugged, or Rugged the Dragon, if you ever want to call me that. But, you know, Rugged's just fine. If you ever go on to my Twitch and Twitter, you definitely see me on there all the time. So if you ever want to discuss certain topics about anything, if you want to start a topic all in general, or you want to participate in the streams either within the text chat itself along with possible voice chat guests and all that, let me know. And any other questions you want to ask, you know, we'll actually have to address them. If I ever get popular to the point where I have a section of the episode where near the end we just go through our history of, like, personal messages on Twitter and Discord and all that, and we'll just go through them and answer them very accurately as much as possible. So without further delay, we are going to be talking about the Castlevania series in terms of video games and everything else. Castlevania has been around forever. Let's just say that. It's been around since the 80s. Now, the first iteration of Castlevania I've actually seen firsthand in my eyes would have to be Castlevania 2 for the NES. So my brother was more heavily invested into video games back then because he was older than me. I was born in 85. So when I started to remember things and realize what was going on around me, right? My brother was playing Castlevania 2 for the NES. Now, what's funny is that I was more terrified of games back then. Like, certain little things would scare me. And Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest definitely had that main theme song that really scared me. Because that game was more of like a fear of the unknown, right? I didn't know what to expect. The music was just terrifying already, right? But then, like, when you hear that theme and didn't realize what was going to happen, like, that game had day and night sequences, right? Where you would, like, the enemies would get stronger. Villagers would warn you about, like, certain dangers within the land, and you didn't know what to expect, right? And that game was so convoluted. We didn't know what was going on, right? So, I remember back in the day, Nintendo Power had some minor controversy with one of their older issues, which featured Castlevania 2, but the gory details apparently were, I guess, a little too scary for children and kind of rose some complaints with adults. So I seen the issue. It didn't seem that bad, that big of a deal. They said they mentioned that they revealed a cow's heart in the magazine, but honestly, whatever. It's not much to go on. But anyway, so I didn't really personally get into Castlevania. Like, I didn't start fanboying about it until about, I'd say, around 1999, right? So, there were other games in the series. We played them, and we rented them from video stores, but we didn't have that much money back then, so we couldn't really afford too many games. So, whatever we had, that's all we could get. It was very rare of us to actually get a brand new NES game or a Super Nintendo game and all that. So, it eventually changed when we received a Nintendo 64 back in 96 for Christmas, right? And I remember we rented a game simply called Castlevania for Nintendo 64. We dub it officially as Castlevania 64, right? This game was the biggest move in regards to my interest in the series as a whole, right? It didn't age well. The graphics in that game were very outdated. The challenge of the game was often either too difficult or just unfair. You had to go through, like, trial and error just to understand the concepts, understand the traps, understand how, just basically how to master the game. It was essentially a lot of trial and error, mostly with the bad camera angles. But I remember Castlevania 64 was an extremely atmospheric game. Extremely atmospheric. I loved it. Everything about it was just, oh, I loved it. Like, personally, it was, like, it was my big start, because I had the music, I had the storyline down in a way, and, like, I beat the game multiple times, like, even on the hard difficulties and all that stuff. It was just, wow. Now, a lot of people consider Castlevania 64 to be a lesser-known game, a less successful in a way, probably, But personally, in my experience, I think it was really great. I loved it. And afterwards, I started getting into emulation. I know, we couldn't afford things back then. We eventually got into emulation on whatever computer we had. And I was able to play certain old NES and Super Nintendo games via emulation on a keyboard. Yeah, I didn't use a controller. I used a keyboard. I know, but I got used to it. But eventually, I don't know how... Consider me, I guess, kind of advanced to play an old game on a keyboard only rather than the controller. I can't do that nowadays, obviously. So, going forward, like, I remember really getting into the Game Boy Advance titles. And then eventually the DS titles were just, oh my god. Ugh. They were lifesavers when I was deployed overseas in Iraq, right? I remember playing a ton, absolute ton, of Dawn of Sorrow on my first deployment and Portrait of Ruin on my second deployment, which, in my opinion, Portrait of Ruin was probably the best game of the DS category. Now, in terms of the best overall Castlevania, that's debatable. A lot of people say Symphony of the Night, because that introduced a lot of good music tracks. Like, one of the first best Metroidvania titles that you ever can ever play. And it didn't sell well in the US, surprisingly enough. But it's nowadays it's like revered to be the best Castlevania game ever made. And the animations for that game are also extremely smooth. I remember I didn't get to play Symphony of the Night when it first came out. I played it about, I'd say about 7 or 8 years after it released. I got a copy of it on eBay. And it wasn't too expensive, fortunately, at the time. But I got my copy of it, played it on the PlayStation, and oh my gosh, I was amazed by it. And it just further cemented my interest in the series as a whole. And it was just an amazing game. So, to tell you about what I know about the history of Castlevania in terms of what exactly is the series about. So the series is essentially the eternal struggle between humanity and Dracula and Dracula's minions and everybody else, right? The original story was that every 100 years, a Belmont, a noble warrior, noble class of warriors, right, vampire hunters, are specifically tasked with defeating Dracula and his minions, making sure Dracula dies, and eventually he'll come back every 100 years. We're essentially peace. The Belmonts are kind of like the peacekeepers, only they hit things with a whip. Now, the entire history, because I'm a nerd, apparently the first ever instance of a Belmont was somewhere in France, I believe. It was around the 1000s AD with Leon Belmont. So he was the first Belmont to essentially wage war against evil itself. Right? Dracula was not known yet. But Leon had his vampire killer whip infused with the soul of his beloved. Well, we don't really hear about that too much. Kind of a minor spoiler here for that, but it's like that's the reason why the whip is so powerful, because it contains the soul of an innocent, in a way. And their innocence yet rage emanate within this leather whip, which is often depicted as a chain whip for some reason. I don't know why. It's I guess there was like a lack of consistency back then. So the establishment is that the vampire killer is a black leather bullwhip, which I think is the best design for it. And you know, in the first game, we had Leon Belmont, but we didn't see Dracula until about 1476, I believe. And that's the storyline with Trevor Belmont, right? Trevor Belmont was the first official Belmont to fight against Dracula. Now, he didn't fight him alone. He also had Sypha Belnades, Alucard, and Grant Danesty, who is never shown from again. He's only in Castlevania 3. And there was a slight cameo in Symphony of the Night, which technically the characters are not actually the real heroes. They're like zombie impersonation bosses, but, you know, at least he's somewhat mentioned. But for some reason, they decided that Grant was no longer considered to be an important character, and they just outright took him out of the game. Like, he's still in the game, But in terms of like anything else involving storylines, like say like the Netflix show, he's not there at all. He's just gone. I thought Netflix would eventually add him back to the show, but sadly he's not in it at all. And speaking of that Netflix show, not going to spoil it too much, but Castlevania on Netflix is superb. Superb show overall. First season was short, but good. Second season was the best. Third season was pretty okay. Kind of was slow. And the fourth season had a great ending to it. I loved it. Oh, it was so great. It was so, so good. What else? So after Trevor Belmont, you know, defeats Dracula, you had another 100 years pass by. 1576, you had Christopher Belmont entering the fray. Now, Christopher is not well known within the Belmont family, mainly because his two and only games, well, technically three, because they did a remake of it later on called, was it called Castlevania Adventure Rebirth, which was for Nintendo Wii on the WiiWare shop, which you can't find anymore. So they gotta re-release that game officially, hopefully. But Christopher Belmont, now, the Castlevania Adventure series on the Game Boy, I also played these games nonstop, right? This was another game that is relatively unknown to most people that I loved and enjoyed as a kid. Because that was one of the things we could afford were Game Boy games. Once Game Boy games were, like, discounted and sold in, like, old marketplaces, you would see, like, a whole basket full of these Game Boy games that are on sale at stores, right? And I would just look around and run my fingers through the boxes wondering which one do I want, and then I saw Castlevania 2 Belmont's Revenge and I'm like, yeah, because we already owned Castlevania the Adventure, and oh, I played Castlevania the Adventure so many times that the sequel was so much better. So yeah, Christopher Belmont was the second Belmont to destroy Dracula, but this is also the first time where Dracula wasn't fully dead. I know, really weird, right? So basically, Castlevania Adventure, you fight Dracula, beat him, not fully dead, but he's pretty much enough hurt enough to the point where he can't be resurrected, can't get his power back yet. Yeah, he's so like out of it right now. So it took so many years until finally he enacted his idea, which was, hey, I got beat by a Belmont 100 years ago. It was because their children keep coming back for me. So how about I take the guy's son before he becomes a vampire hunter, trying to turn him against the Belmont clan. So he does. That was an interesting storyline twist right there, which I liked. I liked that quite a bit. So like, even though Dracula keeps coming back, he always thinks of something new, usually. So in this specific case that nobody ever thinks about, he thought to himself, what if I just take a Belmont son and try to turn him against everybody? Almost worked, almost did, but Christopher, of course, had to kill Dracula a second time, because the first time wasn't enough. And then the most famous Belmont was in 1676 or 1691, I believe, around there, was Simon Belmont. Now, Simon Belmont, well, he was technically was the first Castlevania game ever made, but Simon Belmont was most famous because he was the first person, in our history at least, to kill Dracula in terms of video game releases. It's a simple game, you know, Castlevania. You go through the castle, beat Dracula. That's it. And then they made a direct sequel to that, which I mentioned before, was Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest. That game was so convoluted because you didn't know what you had to do. There were certain puzzles which you would not have found out about. You would never have discovered on your own. And that personally led me to the theory that Nintendo Power essentially wanted their games to be so hard that on top of paying $30, $40, $50 for a new game, you had to pay an extra $15 or so a month for their subscription to their magazine to beat those games. So it was kind of like getting a house for a lot of money. But then if you want to get to your house, you have to pay extra $50 for the key. It was kind of like a little, well, you know, you want to complete this game, you want to enjoy it, but you need a way to get through it, right? That's what we're going to do. But it didn't work, obviously. So And officially in history, the next Belmont, which was my personal favorite, occurred in 1792, which was Richter Belmont. Typical another Belmont story, goes to Dracula's castle, beats Dracula, but he also has to save his girlfriends. And he also rescues a little girl named Maria Renard, who is a huge, powerful magician, also a very overpowered character. he was featured in Rondo of Blood, along with the sequel later on, about 5 years after the defeat of Dracula. This is what really made things different, though, for the series, right? In 1797, I believe, 5 years after the death of Dracula, Richter disappeared. The last Belmont in that time period, I don't know if he had a son yet or a child yet, but if he doesn't have a kid and something bad happens to him, we're doomed. So they found out later on that it was Dracula's subordinates, one of his subordinates, apparently trying to possess Richter. Again, with that whole idea of turning a Belmont against his father, they tried to turn a strong Belmont and make him work for evil, essentially. Kind of like getting them out of the way. So this is where the storyline kind of gets convoluted. So from what I know about the history of the Belmonts is that they could not trust themselves to fight because of what happened to Richter. So they decided to give their whip to other families, specifically the Morris family. Now, this occurred throughout the 18 and 1900s. So for like 200 years, just about, the Belmonts were just disappeared. They're gone. Not dead, just out of sight. So other people had to come up and fight Dracula themselves, either by their own weapons or using the vampire killer. Problem with the vampire killer is that if you're not a Belmont and you're wielding this thing, it's going to kill you eventually. It's too powerful, right? We didn't get to see a Belmont until 1999. That's when the last Demon Castle War occurred. And Dracula was defeated for good. Well, his castle was sealed in a solar eclipse, which prevented his regeneration cycle. So Dracula was just off, gone. But just because Dracula's gone doesn't specifically mean that people are going to try to bring him back in some other way. And that happened in the future. I think, what year was it? Was it 2032, 2035, 2036, around there? But like after a while, though, with the whole Castlevania series being like 100 years every time Dracula is revived, they ran out of ideas. They said to themselves, we need to start making games that take place between other titles. So I've mentioned a couple already, like Symphony of the Night was a sequel to Rondo of Blood. Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest, was a sequel to the first Castlevania. But then later on, throughout the Game Boy Advance titles, the DS titles, and some PlayStation 2 titles as well, and Xbox, they started taking their games back to older timelines, taking place in between games. For example, Castlevania 3, you have the sequel called Curse of Darkness for PS2. The game that took place after Castlevania 1 and 2 was Harmony of Dissonance for the Game Boy Advance. There was also, what else was there? Let's see. There was, surprisingly enough, there is no Castlevania game that takes place after the events of Castlevania Adventure and Belmont's Revenge. There's only a comic book, by the way, what was it called? Castlevania Legacy. For those who don't know, it was like an old comic book. I owned it for a while and I sold it on eBay, but I read through the whole thing. It was kind of like a retelling of the events of that game. Now, the only kind of game we ever got around the Christopher Belmont time period was the WiiWare game called Castlevania Adventure Rebirth, which is essentially the remake of Castlevania Adventure 1, right? That's pretty much all we got for that character, because like I said, Christopher Belmont is a lesser known Belmont in the entire series. What else was there? Now, Circle of the Moon was been made by the same creators of Castlevania 64. Now, they tried to make this separate storyline based around the Dracula novel itself, but still lesser known, and some people considered Circle of the Moon to be retconned within the story itself. Let's see. But, when it comes down to Castlevania 64, I remember there was a direct sequel to that game, which, again, I loved it. We could not afford it, so I had to rent it a couple times just to beat it. And it was called Legacy of Darkness, aka the game that should have been released prior to Castlevania 64, because Legacy of Darkness was more like a director's cut of Castlevania 64, because it added a new character, new storyline, also including the old characters and their old storylines as well, along with extra content, right? That's the game we should have received, but unfortunately, it did not happen until later on. Some people were mad that they bought a game for full price, and then they bought another game for full price, but it was essentially DLC, which is interesting enough, but whatever. So, like I said, the games kept coming out one by one. We loved them regardless, because eventually the series strayed away from classic side-scroller action to Metroidvania, and more people were into Metroidvania. The last official Castlevania Metroidvania title to be released under the director named Igarashi was called, what's it called? Order of Ecclesia. Now, Order of Ecclesia was the last DS title where it featured, it actually directly notified people about the disappearance of the Belmonts. Not many people knew why exactly it happened, but it just happened. They knew about it, and they knew that in order to keep the Earth safe, the Order of Ecclesia had to be created to establish kind of like a barrier between evil and good. Kind of like protecting the good from the bad guys. But yeah, it's... And then later on, I remember, what company was it? Was it Hideo Kojima? So the guy who created Metal Gear decided to get invested within the Castlevania series itself, right? So they decided, you know what we should do? Let's reboot the series. Let's start over. Let's drop the convoluted storyline that we're already getting, right? Because a lot of it's not making sense. There's too many instances of Dracula coming back. So let's go back to the drawing board in a way, and let's just reboot the series by having it start off in 1000s and then explain how everything occurred, like the creation of the Belmonts, the establishment of the vampire killer itself, the whip, which in that game was known as the Combat Cross, which was a pretty interesting mechanic. And that game starred Gabriel Belmont, and he fights through evil and he has to defeat Satan. Now, it was a good game. I definitely liked Lords of Shadow. Lords of Shadow was a great Castlevania game overall. It had great music, great 3D effects, everything like that. The story was interesting as well, although a lot of hardcore Castlevania fans would definitely not want to let the old storyline go, because there's so much built up from what the other games established that to just let that go and just say, you know what, we're just going to reboot everything, you know, it's going to be hard. But I was optimistic, so then I waited for the sequel. I played the sequel. Lords of Shadow 2 was unfortunately not a big success. And that kind of led people away from the idea of the rebooted storyline. They're like, you know, the second game wasn't that good. The storyline wasn't really that great to begin with, so let's kind of drop it in a way. So that's what happened. Eventually, we started going back to the original storyline via the Netflix TV series I mentioned earlier, because it's like, why are we going to continue with the story from Lords of Shadow when the other one was so much better? So at this point in history for Castlevania, Lords of Shadow is more of its own storyline rather than an actual, like, reboot. We're not disregarding the old Castlevania story because it's too important. We just have the original story, and we have the Lords of Shadow timeline, which they don't connect to at all. But like I said before, Lords of Shadow, it was a good game, but unfortunately, it didn't do too well, so, you know, things happen. So, the personal question is, how are we going to get Castlevania games today and in the future? Because for those who haven't been aware, Konami is not in the greatest shape in terms of game development and game studios in general, right? They're, ever since the fiasco involving firing Kojima with from Metal Gear Solid 5 to canceling Silent Hills and then making their money through pachinko machines and also investing in NFTs, which, why? the company is not getting a lot of traction with new titles, right? There's not a lot of people wanting to work for the company. That's my guess. Especially considering they made a game called Metal Gear Survive, which, I didn't play it myself, but I heard a lot of people just trash that game, right? So Konami is kind of in a bad state. Now, we could get a Castlevania game, but it could come in two ways. One is by miracle, where Konami somehow manages to hire a few people to make a very good game. The other option is that Konami releases the rights to Castlevania to some other company. Could be Capcom, maybe, I don't know, whatever company buys it first. You know, maybe Microsoft will attain the rights to Castlevania, maybe Sony will, who knows what will happen. But if they do make a new Castlevania, please make it good. And the other question is, what kind of game will it be? Will it be 3D, like Lords of Shadow? Will it be side-scrolling Metroidvania, like everyone likes it? Or could it possibly be classic side-scrolling level-to-level-to-level style of game from, like, 1980s, right? That would be an interesting take to go back to the extreme basics of the game itself, but you would need a lot of innovation within that field just to make it work. Because, like I said, everyone today is too used to the Metroidvania style of the games that came prior to it. So, in my opinion, what are other good things about the series besides the games themselves and the story? My opinion, it's the artwork and the music. Those two are my favorite things. Because for those who don't know, the artist that I know very well, who's made artwork for Castlevania, Symphony of the Night, Harmony of Dissonance, Aria of Sorrow, and a bunch of other games, right? Ayami Kojima is her name. And if you don't know her art style, oh my god. Ayami Kojima's art style is superb. Absolutely superb. It's like, it's very detailed. Very, very, very invested into their work. You look at the artwork and you'll see. It's kind of like a gothic representation of characters. I can't really describe how it is. Most characters in the artwork are like pale skinned, typically like gothic looking ish, kind of like, not in terms of makeup, but like it's the way their eyes are represented. They look like people who have been through a lot or appear in different situations, right? I can't really describe it. It's just amazing. If you look up Ayami Kojima's artwork for Castlevania and other original pieces, you'll see exactly what I mean, right? And the other thing about the music, most of the music I like was composed by, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, Michiru Yamane? Michiru? Is it Michiru? I don't even know. But Yamane herself first started in Castlevania Bloodlines for the Sega Genesis. And like, and going forward, they got her back for Symphony of the Night. What else did they get her for? They also got her for Aria of Sorrow, Dawn of Sorrow, Curse of Darkness. Pretty much all the DS games you can think of. Portrait of Ruin, Order of Ecclesia. All of that music that you hear from those games, that's Yamane doing all that music. Symphony of the Night, in my opinion, is the like pinnacle of Castlevania soundtracks. If you ever hear the Castlevania Symphony of the Night soundtrack, there's everything involved. There's rock, atmospheric music. There's even, like, I think there's moments of, like, jazz, which is interesting, right? So, oh, I remember, and I know all the most of the titles for all these songs. There's, like, Vampire Killer, Bloody Tears, The Beginning, Iron Blue Intention, one called Dracula's Castle, which is Alucard's theme. I don't know why they call it Dracula's Castle itself, but it's interesting. What do you call it? Festival of Servants. Sinking Old Sanctuary. You know, that's... Oh! Now, when I played Legacy of Darkness, I remember there was a level called the Art Tower, which featured that song called Sinking Old Sanctuary. That song... Oh my god, if you ever hear an orchestra play it, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. You just listen to it, and you'll understand why. Another one is called Divine Bloodlines, which is Richter Belmont's theme. Now, normally it's like stage music for Rondo of Blood, like the first level you go through the game. But then I remember Castlevania for Nintendo 64 did a violin solo of that song. Again, extremely beautiful. I love it. Like I said, the artwork, music are the best things about the game. And the other thing is, the storyline is not so strong for the series, but the Metroidvania aspect of it is engaging. And the old classic games are difficult as anything, but again, very nostalgic. It's the kind of game that I would really like to get into again. In the future, I should consider possibly replaying some old games, either from the Game Boy Advance era, the DS era, maybe some older ones for the NES, because I remember I think I did beat Castlevania 3 a while ago. God, Castlevania 3. Now, if we're talking about the difficulty of Castlevania in terms of which game is the hardest, Castlevania 3 is definitely one of the hardest. Another one would have to be Rondo of Blood. That was tough. The original Castlevania is short, but also very difficult as well. If we're talking about difficulty as in actual challenges, those are the games. But if we're talking about difficulty in terms of, like, cryptic difficulty, that would be Castlevania 2, because you have no idea what the heck you're doing. Like, you need a guide for that. If you have a guide for Castlevania 2 throughout the entire time playing, then it's not that difficult. If I had to guess, if I had to suggest which game was the hardest in terms of Metroidvania, tough one. I'd say one of the toughest was probably Order of Ecclesia. Because I remember in that game, like, going through the game normally is fine, but when you go through boss fights, yikes. It's kind of like Metroid Dread all over again. Metroid Dread was like, yeah, you can play through the game normally, but when you get to a boss, you can get, like, two-shotted at times, right? That's what it felt like for Order of Ecclesia. So overall, with the whole Castlevania series in general, I'm knowledgeable about it, but I'm not extremely, like, versed in everything that is about it. That requires a lot of nerd logic itself and research, but from what I've been through, I love the series throughout the time playing, right? I've had a lot of experiences. It definitely kept me sane during my deployments in Iraq through the handheld titles and even the PS2 titles. I had to play through Lament of Innocence and Curse of Darkness on a PlayStation 2 Slim on a portable DVD player screen. Right, that's how I got through my deployments. I was just playing these games nonstop. And I even played them on the crazy difficulty. Which, I don't know why I did it, but I did it. Because I needed something to do. So, hey, if you have nothing else to do, nothing else to play, play a hard version of the same game you played. New experience right there. So, and here's my hopes for the future for Castlevania on Netflix, because there is going to be a new show. But it's going to take place in a different time period. We're thinking Richter Belmont. We don't know. But I actually had an interesting conversation about that. So we all know in the ending to Castlevania on Netflix. I'm not going to spoil it too much. But the idea is that we show Dracula in the show. Right? But in the sequel show with Richter, we may not even have Dracula in it. Which is kind of strange, because you have a Castlevania game without Dracula. That's kind of like Picasso with no brush. So, but I think they can make it work, right? So, in my opinion, I think Richter should show up in the new show in the 1700s, but there's no Dracula. Instead, there are a bunch of other villains. The ones we do know, like Lord Shaft himself, and some other ones we may not know about, who are just added later on. Now, I said to myself, imagine if the Castlevania show on Netflix with Richter Belmont one of the villains he has to fight, one of the major villains that gets revealed later, is a monster known as Gallimoth. And for those who don't know him, oh, look him up. Big monster. He is like, he looks like an Egyptian Anubis a little bit, but he controls lightning with a staff. Now, they may draw him differently if they ever made him into a show, but can you imagine him appearing in a Netflix show in like the last few episodes of the season? Now, obviously you have to have Dracula's son in it, Alucard, because Alucard made the entire Netflix show amazing. Such a great character. A lot more of a narcissistic asshole, as you could call him. Sorry for my language there, but that's kind of like a quotable thing you could describe Alucard as. He liked Belmont, but at the same time, he always had to make fun of him. Anytime Belmont was on the screen, Alucard was like, "Hey, Belmont. Oh, I heard you didn't like being called Treffy. So we're going to name this village after you, named Treffy Village or something, just to rub it in." And the funniest thing about that whole series is that when those two characters, Belmont and Alucard, had to part ways, instead of waving like they usually do, Alucard just flips them off. I was like, yes. It's kind of like one of those friendships where you really do like each other, but at the same time, it's also a weird way of displaying affection. You're always making fun of each other. You're always insulting each other. Not meaning it, maybe sometimes, but it's one of the best. What would you call that? A bromance, in a way? But anywho, I think we're pretty much at the end of the episode. I know it's a little shorter than usual, but, you know, whenever I'm passionate about something and I feel like I've talked enough about it, you know, it's time to end the episode. I don't have to make my podcast 2 or 3 hours on average, you know, that would be too much. So I want to ask everybody in this video specifically, do you like Castlevania? And what are your memories of the series itself? And all this other stuff. Anything you can mention about the game itself. Now, in regards to other questions regarding anything you want to ask me, again, go on my Twitter at Rugged the Dragon, all one word. And you can also go on my Discord server, which is linked within this podcast episode. Every episode has my Discord server linked within it. If anything happens to it, obviously I'll change the links, obviously, because I can always edit things. But yeah, you can also join my server and go into conversations. Directly message me on Discord. And again, personal message me on Twitter with any questions you may have so I can answer them in the future episodes. And if you also want to partake in future episodes via voice chat, also let me know. Because that'll be amazing to actually have a guest on the show one day. But in anywho, I'm going to get going, guys. I hope you enjoyed the next 9th episode of Castlevania itself, the podcast dedicated to that series, because I just love it so much. Oh, I love it. I want to play it now after talking about it. I really want to play it. The question is, which one? There's so many games. Anywho, I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I am Rugged the Dragon, and I will see you guys next time. Take it easy, everybody.